This podcast is brought to you in part by Contact My Politician, a free, fast way to find your local and national politicians and to keep them accountable. Click on their banner at our website, michaelmedved.com.
And now, your daily dose of debate, breaking news, and uncensored views. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day when Amy Coney Barrett, as long as there's no asteroid that hits the earth or some kind of meteor that comes down in Washington, D.C., she is due to be confirmed by the U.S. Senate tonight. And so it is a great day. It's also a great day because it is the last full week before the election. Yeah, that's right. The election's one week from tomorrow. Can you believe it? And meanwhile, the president is campaigning tirelessly in Pennsylvania, which is absolutely crucial for him to win. The state of Washington, which is a state that President Trump won't win. It's not close in Washington state. It's not close in Alabama either. He's going to win in Alabama. He's not going to win in Washington state. Washington state just received an award from Brookings Institution. We will get to that also in a moment. But the president's speaking live in Martinsburg, PA. And let's hear what he has to say. He's not speaking from a teleprompter, it appears. He's letting her rip. Here's the president.
Advantage of by the Democrats the last time with mostly Elizabeth Warren and the others, they ganged up on him. And he goes back and he goes into the Senate. I think he's the greatest loser. He's a good loser. He's a good sport. Crazy Bernie. And in the last week's debate, Joe Biden confirmed his plan to abolish the entire U.S. oil industry. That's right. And that's why Kristen said, why are you doing this? Because she's on his side, you know. Because that's NBC, owned by Comcast, C-O-N, not C-O-M, C-O-N. So she's on his side. She's saying, why are you doing this? If you really look, it's almost pleading. Sir, why are you doing this? And I'm saying, just be quiet, Kristen. No, that's what happens. That's right. That's what happened to Perry Mason. Remember, the guy was always great, great, great. Then at the end, I did it. That was Sleepy Joe. That's what happened. You don't need a president like that. That means no fracking, no natural gas, no coal, no jobs, no energy, no Pennsylvania families being well taken care of. Fracking is saving Pennsylvania families $2,500 a year, at least. And it's saving families all over the country. We are energy independent, and you're a big part of it, and they want to end that. They want to go to wind. Do you love wind? A nice windmill right alongside of your house. Your house is now worthless. You know, when those windmills go up and they're near your house, I know a lot about wind. It costs many, many, many times the energy that we're talking about. Many, many times, like 32 cents versus 3 cents, whether it's natural gas or other things, but many, many times. But you put up a windmill. If you want to see a bird graveyard, go under a windmill sometime. You will see a graveyard. You will see it kills your birds. Got a lot of problems, okay? And it needs subsidy, massive subsidy. You don't want to be giving subsidy to energy when there's no reason to do it. So he wants wind and he wants solar. I like solar too, but it still isn't developed. And solar's not going to power your big, powerful plants, which we have to have in order to compete and beat the rest of the world. It's just not going to do it, and neither is wind. And neither is wind. He will eradicate Pennsylvania energy production and send your state into a crippling depression. That's what it's going to be, because energy is such a big... People just don't know that, Mike, about Pennsylvania. It's a big, big energy state. Be amazed. You know, it's funny, Texas. So he's against oil. He's against guns, Second Amendment. And he's against God. So he goes, and then they say, President Trump is 4 points up in Texas, and the governor calls me from Texas, great guy, Greg. He said, sir, that's not true. You're up a lot. But they don't say that. But think of it. You're against oil. We're in Texas. You're against oil. You're against God. You're against guns. In Texas. Guns in Texas. Trump is up 4 points. It's a very close race. No, no. Same thing here. Because you have the same thing. And you could really say the same thing, almost to a little bit lesser extent. But the Texas was just amazing. So that's why I said at the end, Texas and Pennsylvania, I hope you're looking, and I hope you're listening. And that goes for Ohio, and it goes for Oklahoma, and it goes for a lot of other places.
Okay, Oklahoma is not a close state. Oklahoma is a state that President Trump is winning handily. According to all the most recent polling, including polling that came out this morning, a Dallas Morning News, University of Texas Tyler poll showed Biden ahead of Trump in Texas, 48-45. Do I think that Joe Biden will carry Texas? Absolutely not. But I think President Trump is referring to it because it's one of those states that is in play. If it's within a 3-point margin, the Dallas Morning News poll, University of Texas Tyler poll, which was conducted between October 13th and October 20th, shows Biden ahead by 3. By the way, other state polling, South Dakota, President Trump's way ahead, 11 points. There was also a poll here because a lot of people have been talking about, and who knows? You know, I think anybody who looks at any polling and says, well, this is it, this is the end of the story, this is where it's going to end up, it's wrong. But there was a poll from Black Entertainment Television, and it was a poll of Black voters, and they went to some trouble to make sure that it was age balanced, because there does appear to be such a dramatic upsurge in young voters of every race. And according to the Black Black Entertainment Television poll, BET poll together with CBS News, it was conducted by YouGov between October 13th and October 19th, and it showed Joe Biden leading President Trump on 90% to 8%. Now, what's fascinating about that, those are exactly the same numbers that Hillary ended up with in the Black community, 90% to 8% for Trump. Actually, according to some exit polls, she got 88%. And the can this make a difference? Look, this is a close election, and it's close all around the country. It's close in Pennsylvania, as President Trump addressed. It's close in Georgia and North Carolina and Iowa and Michigan, in Wisconsin. In Montana, not so close. Trump beating Biden 50% to 46%. But that's shockingly close. That's a Scott Rasmussen poll. Scott Rasmussen, the same pollster who delivered the first national poll showing Trump ahead in the national popular vote. People now are sophisticated. They know the national popular vote doesn't count. Does it count psychologically? Sure. Will it be tougher to keep up a protracted electoral fight and attempts to fight over votes from a specific state? Will it be tougher to do that if you lose the national popular vote by a lot? I think it will be tougher. And it matters in terms of the willingness of the American people to accept a result. And by the way, this is one of those things where President Trump speaks a lot, as he did earlier today in the rally we were listening in on. President Trump spoke about Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and Joe Biden all refusing to accept the results of the election last time. Actually, she was pretty quick in conceding. I mean, given the fact that she did end up winning the popular vote by almost 3 million. And Al Gore also, to his enormous credit, conceded graciously when he won the popular vote by 500,000 in 2000. And that idea of having an orderly election is very important, because the election agitation and combined with a pandemic have created all kinds of horrific cases, including a new plot exposed by the feds, the FBI, to assassinate Joe Biden? We'll get to that coming up on the Medved Show. On the Michael Medved Show, I mentioned that the state of Washington has won an award, not for the campaign in the state of Washington, because actually it is so, unfortunately, the state of Washington has been so badly consigned to one party rule. There isn't much of a campaign. I took the opportunity, and I've been public about this, to write in a Republican for lieutenant governor, because both of the candidates for lieutenant governor who were selected were Democrats. And I wrote in Josh Freed, who's conducting a noble campaign on the basis that if he got more than a third of the write-in votes, it's a forlorn hope. However, a Brookings institution has just gone all across the country to rate every different state, all states, in terms of how they're handling vote by mail in a pandemic. And by the way, in the state of Washington, one of our two elected Republican office holders who is so much deserving of support, and I hope everybody listening to me votes for Kim Wyman and votes for Dwayne Davidson, the state treasurer. They both deserve support and strong support, not just from Republicans, but from any Washingtonians. But Washington earns an A rating, the top rating, for handling the mail-in ballots, because it's taking a look by Brookings of the state's preparedness and how it performs across a range of relevant factors. There are a bunch of other states that get an A rating, including New Jersey, which also has all mail-in ballots. Colorado, Utah, Nevada, all mail-in ballots. Oregon, all mail-in ballots. And all of these states generally have strong public approval. Hawaii, too, also gets an A rating. What are the states that don't do as well? The only one with all mail-in ballots that does not get an A rating is Vermont. And they get a B. But the only F in the country is Alabama. Alabama, I think the results are going to be clear no matter how you may rank the mail-in ballots. Mississippi, Louisiana, Missouri, and Wyoming get D grades, as does Virginia and South Carolina. So there you have it for ranking the states according to their preparedness for dealing with mail-in voting. The point here is the states that do all mail-in ballots, they're obviously prepared to handle the idea that you get a lot of different votes that are going to be coming in, literally millions of votes coming in on a mail-in basis. And there's another aspect to this campaign, which I mentioned right before the break. There's a piece in the Washington Post about a case that I've been following since it was revealed toward the end of last week. And it's both fascinating and horrifying. And the headline is: a 19-year-old with a van full of guns, explosives, and pornography plotted to assassinate Biden, federal officials say. It's surprising to me how little attention this story has received, because it's horrifying. And all I can tell you is I think one of the reasons it hasn't received much attention is because if there's any political motive to his attempt to assassinate Biden, it has nothing to do with Trump. There's no indication anywhere that this is a Trump supporter. He appears to have been a Bernie supporter. And his father, his late father, was a big Democrat who was a candidate for the U.S. Senate from New Mexico. Okay. Washington Post reports, as it was becoming clear back in March that Joe Biden would be the Democratic presidential nominee, Alexander Treisman, started to map out his plot to assassinate the former vice president, federal authorities say. Should I kill Joe Biden? Treisman wrote in a caption to a meme he posted in April. That should get the attention of authorities, don't you think? If you're posting a meme that says, should I kill Joe Biden? You want people to pay attention to that. It didn't appear to be an idle threat, the feds say. The 19-year-old searched online for Biden's home address and for night vision goggles and purchased an AR-15 in New Hampshire, according to federal court documents first reported on Thursday. At one point in May, Treisman ended up at the Wendy's within 4 miles of Biden's home in Delaware at his famous basement. And when he was arrested later in May in North Carolina, police searching his van found 4 rifles, a 9mm handgun, and the rifles were prepared. I mean, they were formidable rifles, like AR-15s. Explosive materials, operable bombs, books on bomb making, and, surprise, surprise, $509,000 in cash. Now, to me, this is one of the big questions that nobody's answering is where did this 19-year-old kid who has had a very troubled life, where does he get $509,000 in cash? Those revelations all come in an order that a federal magistrate judge filed outlining why Treisman, who was indicted by a federal grand jury in September on child pornography charges, this is just a charming kid, should remain in custody. News of the arrest is the latest violent threat against the former vice president to be broken up by authorities. A 42-year-old Maryland man was charged Wednesday of last week for allegedly writing a letter in which he threatened to kill Biden and Senator Kamala Harris, Democrat, California. Treisman is originally from Seattle. Isn't that wonderful? He also went by the alias Alexander S. Thighs. He was arrested in May after tellers at the Fifth Third Bank in Kannapolis, North Carolina, reported a white Ford van abandoned in the parking lot. When the police in the town arrived, they said they could see numerous guns and multiple boxes of ammo in the windows. All terrific. Further investigation uncovered several indicators that criminal activity was afoot. So said the Kannapolis police chief. Federal agents were contacted, and while awaiting their arrival, the suspect returned to his van. Police initially arrested Treisman, who was carrying identification cards from Washington, California, and Florida, for carrying a concealed weapon. Discovering he had purchased weapons in at least 4 states, federal officials then allegedly found, get this, 6,721 images and 1,248 videos of child pornography on 8 different digital devices, according to the 8-page detention order. His only political remarks were in support of Bernie Sanders. Is this case an indication of something we need to pay attention to and do something about? I think it is. We will get to that and more coming up on the Medved Show. This young man I was talking about, Alexander Treisman, who is in custody and has no bail because he is considered such a profound risk. One of his other devices had on it and this is one of those things that I think is it's very revealing about the media and the way media work. Treisman appeared, reports here, Jewish Telegraphic Agency, appeared to have an interest in shootings and child pornography. A video uploaded by Treisman to the site Daily Motion in December. So it's, you're talking about 10 months ago. features a compilation of inflammatory snippets, including obscene acts apparently involving children, gun violence, and the use of the N-word. A version of that video was posted to Treisman's YouTube account, where he went by the alias Flippy Mapper and had 141 subscribers. And part of what he did is he once drove past the site of the 2017 Las Vegas shooting in which 57 people were killed. And he recorded a video with his own voice saying, "There it is. That's it. That's the one. That's where they did it. Allah Akbar. Aha. Nice." He has allegedly also glorified the September 11th attacks as well as other mass shootings. What I mentioned about media is that the Washington Post just did ellipses. They took out the part about Allah Akbar, aha, nice. Now, I think there is no evidence that this guy has any Islamic background at all, none. And he has no interest in Islam. And so I think they were trying to be so very, very careful that they just put ellipses. They didn't want to give anybody the impression that he was an Islamic terrorist. He's not. What he's an indication of is one of our most serious national problems that, of course, nobody wants to talk about. They never do, which is mental illness. And the fact that we have entirely too many people who are seriously ill who are running around when they should be in hospitals. And sometimes against their will, as is the case with this guy with his $509,000. God knows where he got it. And his bomb-making material and his plans to shoot Joe Biden. It's all nuts. And clearly, this is a very disturbed individual who's had psychiatric problems. His mother claims, is a high-functioning autistic individual. And in fact, his lawyer claims he is suffering from Asperger's syndrome. Okay, but he's suffering from more than that. If he glorifies mass killings repeatedly and talks about a checklist that he has to go through, the last point in the checklist is execute. That was for his plan to kill Vice President Biden. The entire thing is just bizarre. But we have too many people on our streets. We have too many people throughout America who are dangerous, frankly, and dangerous to themselves and to others. And that's so supposed to be the basis for detention and hospitalization. And I would imagine his family, his father, very prominent attorney, Eric Treisman, was a Senate candidate Democrat in New Mexico once upon a time. He died when the young man Alexander was only 9. Okay. There is more. And a part of it, talk about the media. I mentioned that there was an aspect of President Trump's encounter at 60 Minutes that I thought was wildly distorted by 60 Minutes, and you can hear it for yourself. It's the very end of the interview. And I know that the way this has been reported is that President Trump was being interviewed by 60 Minutes and he stormed out. He just walked out on 60 Minutes because he didn't like the questions. Well, he clearly didn't like the questions. But the end of the interview actually sounded like this. This would be clip 6, Jeremy.
You know, I didn't want to have this kind of angry.
Of course you did.
No, I didn't.
Of course you did.
No, I didn't.
Well, then you brought up a lot of subjects that.
Well, I said
were
I'm going to ask you tough
up.
Questions.
They were inappropriately brought up right from the beginning. No, your first question was, this is going to be tough questions.
Why?
You don't ask Joe Biden. I saw your interview with Joe, the interview with
I
Joe Biden.
I never did a Joe
it
Biden
was a
interview.
Joke. the interview, 60 Minutes. I see Joe Biden giving softball after softball. I've seen all of his interviews. He's never been asked a question that's hard.
Okay, but forget him for a minute.
No, but you start with me.
You're president.
Excuse me, Leslie, you started with me. Your first statement was, are you ready for tough questions?
Are you?
That's no way to talk. There's no way to talk.
Leslie, one second.
At this point, one of our producers interrupted to advise about the time remaining in the interview.
I think we have enough of an interview here, Hope. Okay, that's enough. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go meet for 2 seconds, okay? Thanks. I'll see you in a little while. Thanks.
And he was going up to meet for 2 seconds with Mike Pence, who had arrived and was supposed to do the next interview. And again, did they get along? No, they didn't get along. But is it safe, fair to say that the president walked out because he didn't like the questions? He sat there for 37 minutes and they went back and forth like that. Now, the one thing that's fascinating is when you look at the Biden interview, they actually did hit him with some fairly tough questions, questions that did not help Vice President Biden at all. He did the 60-minute interview with Norah O'Donnell of CBS, not with Leslie Stahl. We will get to that and give you a sample of what that sounded like. And then basically, some of the increasingly costly promises that are being made, both by Joe Biden and not by Kamala Harris, but by one of his other less celebrated running mates, Chuck Schumer. We will get to that and more. And another example of basically, I think, what is damaging the country right now, which is this end-of-the-world feeling that we get from the pandemic, which never seems to end, and the ongoing lockdowns and the dislocation, and then the singular bitterness and polarization of this campaign, which seems and feels like it's gone on forever, doesn't it? And I mean, I'll tell you how bitter the campaign is. We may cover this tomorrow. They've even tried to involve Bigfoot. And I always thought Bigfoot was one subject that was beyond politics. We will get to all of that coming up on the Medved Show. And talk a little bit again about how this all ends. Plus, a boast that just doesn't sound good at a Biden campaign event. He's boasting about something that you would think he would actually want to keep quiet. We will get to that and more coming up on the Medved Show.
Your outlet for outrage.
It's outrageous what's going on out here.
It's the Michael Medved Show.
It is a tremendous, tremendous thing, and I'm telling you, it's going to explode.
The Michael Medved Show.
And on the Michael Medved Show, for too long, a lot of people feel like they're shut out of the very best investment opportunities, particularly with high-tech startups, which are famous for some of their astonishing returns. Now, angels and VCs, venture capitalists, they get in early on some of these most promising companies, while maybe you wait for them to reach multi-billion dollar valuations before you can even begin investing. Now, that ends right here, because at our crowd, they open the doors to today's top pre-vetted opportunities so you can invest early alongside angels and VCs. Check out the opportunities. It costs you absolutely nothing, and you can get notification of some of these opportunities directly at no cost and at no risk to yourself in any way, whatever. Click on Our Crowd at our website at michaelmedved.com. Go to Our Crowd. That's my brother's company headquartered in Jerusalem, Israel. Okay, we were talking before about this 60 Minutes back and forth. And there were some moments for Joe Biden that did not go well in his review with Norah O'Donnell, indicating that, well, they may give President Trump more rugged questioning, but they didn't give Joe Biden exactly a free pass either. This is clip number 9.
Send every single qualified person. Send every single qualified person to a four-year college in their state for $150 billion. I can make sure every single person qualifies community college can go, and we still have a lot of money left over. That's what I mean by significant institutional changes.
The Nonpartisan Tax Policy Center and others have questioned whether Joe Biden's corporate minimum tax plan would raise as much money as he estimates. After our interview, Mr. Biden's staff told us he misspoke and that the cost of free public college could be twice as much as he said.
Okay, that's appropriate. And then there was this, clip 11, about trade deficits with China. This was also a point that Biden brought up in the debate with President Trump. Listen.
The president says that's going to end up sending jobs overseas.
He's sending them overseas already. Take a look at what's happened. We have now a trade deficit that's larger with China than when we were there.
Actually, that depends on how you calculate it. The overall trade deficit with China was slightly lower in 2019 than it was during the last 3 years of the Obama administration.
Okay, and the overall trade deficit in general is up. I mean, America had a record trade deficit, highest in 14 years as a percentage of our economy, but that's not just with China. The idea that they actually are doing fact-checking in real time as they run Biden's interview, I think that's appropriate for them to do, and good for them. Joe Biden was doing a virtual campaign event. This is clip number 18, Jeremy, where I don't think it came out sounding the way it wanted, that the candidate wanted it to sound. Listen.
We're in a situation where we have put together, and you guys did it for our administration, the President Obama's administration before this. We have put together, I think, the most extensive and inclusive voter fraud organization in the history of American politics.
Okay, I don't think that's what he meant. I think what he meant was the most inclusive and extensive anti-voter fraud organization. But sometimes Vice President Biden, it doesn't always come out the way that he means. And with all of this going on, and when you listen to some of the very extensive promises that Joe Biden has made, particularly in regard to education. This is clip 10, Jeremy. It's worth listening to Chuck Schumer, who wants to take over the U.S. Senate and has at least a 50-50 shot of doing that, and which is why it's so important for people to get behind those Republican Senate candidates. Chuck Schumer had this to say. He sat down with an interview with the actress and director Elizabeth Banks. You may remember from The Hunger Games and many, many other movies. Here's Chuck Schumer talking about how Joe Biden, like magic, could eliminate all student debt. Listen.
One of the things, by the way, I'm working with them on, with Elizabeth Warren, may affect your audience. We believe that President Biden, if he becomes president, could eliminate the student loan debt without Congress, with the flick of the pen, that he has the power. So we're proposing that the first $50,000 of everyone's student debt will be automatically eliminated. And they're working with me on this because they know it. They have student debt, a lot of them.
Okay, do you know how outrageous this is and how much it would cost? And how unfair it is to those students who have paid off their debt? This is a terrible idea. And I think people will ask Joe Biden if this is true. Because when you're talking about eliminating $50,000 in debt, first of all, it's hugely favorable to people who went to expensive colleges. Hugely. Because the idea of accumulating $50,000 in college debt, that's a very high amount. When you look at the modest tuition, usually, that you pay at big public universities or certainly at community colleges. Speaking of debt, I don't know if we really owe a debt to Sacha Baron Cohen. But look, I laughed at the first Borat. I know it was raunchy and outrageous, but it was extremely funny. And partially, it expressed some affection for the characters and for America that Borat was discovering for the first time. Well, now they have the sequel, which is called Borat Subsequent Movie Film. Here is the quick review.
Now it's time for Medved's Entertainment Minute.
Everybody's favorite Kazakh journalist is back with a sequel in which he plans to bribe Vice Premier Michael Penis with an unusual gift in the already controversial project known as Borat Subsequent Movie Film on Amazon Prime Video.
Where is everybody?
They're wanting everybody to quarantine so they don't spread this virus.
I'm here to give my daughter as a gift to someone close to the throne.
Much more than the first film, this is a dismaying combination of the utterly hilarious and the totally disgusting. It's rated R, of course, with an adolescent emphasis on male genitalia and female menstrual blood, while trying to draw humor from the COVID-19 pandemic and the Holocaust. Much of the humor is sadistic, where it's hard not to laugh, but impossible not to cringe. 2 stars for the inventive, outrageous, and sometimes unwatchable Borat Subsequent Movie Film. And I did speak about the controversial couple of minutes that he has Rudy Giuliani on screen. And look, I'm not a member of Rudy Giuliani's fan club, not by a long shot. However, the way that it's being represented, I do think that the film was edited in such a way to make things look much worse and more embarrassing for Rudy Giuliani than they really were. Did he behave in a flirtatious way with a 24-year-old actress who was supposed to be playing a 15-year-old? Sure. He didn't know she was supposed to be 15-year-old. He hadn't heard that. But for goodness sake, this whole thing about him lying down on the bed when he's trying to unhook the cord from his microphone that they had put on for part of the mock interview, the girl is supposed to be playing Maria Bakalova, Borat's daughter. It just seems to me it's a bad rap. Coming up next time, more indications of basically just the collapse of the American ability to get along. What can be done now in the last remaining week before the election to make sure that November 4th is a day that we can celebrate as a country by having put some of this divisiveness behind us? We'll talk about that. We'll also talk about an unlikely icon of the COVID-19 pandemic. Who am I talking about? Sasquatch. Bigfoot. Why? There's a reason, of course, and the greatest and the worst of presidential campaign commercials of the 2020 cycle. There's commercials that are appalling and some that are almost inspiring on all sides in this greatest nation on God's green earth.